As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on The Athletic Podcast Network.
That is hammered! Oh, my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far, I ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field! It is out of here!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 61 of The Roundtable. I'm Grant Brisby, here with Andy McCullough and Mark Carrig. Mark, you're back. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks. It was nice to be a roundtable head for a week. And to get infuriated with the lack of fact-checking that goes on in this piddly podcast when I'm not here.
Oh boy, here it comes.
Like Thelma and Louise are the ones who drove off the cliff together, not Bonnie and Clyde.
I think what he was going for was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, like, jumping off the cliff together, maybe?
No, I was 100% thinking that Bonnie and Clyde drove off the cliff together. That's Thelma and Louise?
I'm pretty sure that is Thelma and Louise.
Wait, okay. So Thelma and Louise is the one with Brad Pitt, right?
Uh-huh.
Bonnie and Clyde is...
Warren Beatty, Faye Dunaway.
And Robert Redford is...
Sundance Kid.
Butch Cassidy. Yeah. Who's Butch Cassidy?
Butch Cassidy. And then, Paul Newman, one of them?
Paul Newman? Okay. All right. Can you imagine just listening to this show... and, like, not immediately turning it off?
Yeah, no, this is the good stuff. It's the actual baseball content that gets us in trouble.
Right. We get over our skis when we discuss baseball.
What the hell's going on in that sport? I will just say, elephant in the room, we do a lot of spoofs and goofs on the show. Wander Franco, we are not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole because there's just not a lot that we know about it right now. There's no spoofs or goofs to be had with this. So that's, if you're waiting for our hot takes, buddy, you're not going to find them.
I do want to say, like, it's not that, like, as you said, Graham, we mess around a bit, like, on the show, but I don't think we're afraid to, like, discuss serious things and not just, you know, make fun of each other. But, like, what is there to say about the case while it's under investigation? And then discussing, hey, how does this, what are the ramifications for the Rays roster? No, man, we're not doing that. So let's just see, well, you know, when we know more, maybe we'll have something to say. But until then, not, you know, brutal story.
Good way to put it. We're going to move on to awards. It's a award season. Yeah, how about that segue? Just butter, just smooth and silky. No, seriously, we're at MVPs, Cy Youngs, rookies of the year. I'll go first. AL Cy Young, I have an idea.
Okay, can I start with a macro question?
Damn it,
about
the
Cy Youngs?
Wait, I meant AL MVP. That was my joke.
Oh,
God, son of a biscuit. I have no idea AL Cy Young.
Grant.
I don't know, man. I actually have, real quick, my vote this year, I have a vote. It's for NL Manager of the Year.
Well, it's Buck Showalter.
I know who you're voting for.
I have written in the past about how I hate the Manager of the Year award because it ends up being like manager of the team that surpassed my preseason expectations. And I've been like, ah, it's lazy. There's got to be a way to really dig down and do a lot of work and really just dive into this and spend time to figure out the Manager of the Year. And now I'm the idiot that's got to do that. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to kick this in the butt. I'm going to like talk to people. I'm going to do research. I'm going to do managerial stats. I'm going to talk to like our Marlins beat writer, our Diamondbacks beat writer, our Brewers beat writer. I'm going to get like all of that down. You know what I mean? Like I'm going to do the work here.
I actually think there's an obvious pick for NL Manager of the Year, and I don't think he's going to win it. I think it's Dave Roberts.
He's had to deal with a lot.
The Dodgers are like really screwed up roster-wise. They have had a lot of things go wrong. Their pitching is just like a bit of a nightmare. And they are going to win that division by 7 or 8 games. Like at some point, you know, there should be some acknowledgement of the things that Dave Roberts does really, really well. Like really, really well, you know, in keeping this thing on the rails.
They have two top 10 players in the lineup all the time. Like two top 10 in baseball with Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts. Like, I get what you're saying, and I do appreciate that he's had a ton of struggles with the pitching. But, man, like, that team is loaded offensively, so I get it. But all season, I've been impressed with the way Gabe Kapler has managed the Giants' pitching staff with, you know, you got Logan Webb and Alex Cobb in the first half, and then you have to figure it out with opener after opener after opener without guys getting tired, and it's been really impressive. But I have to do, like, I gotta figure out what a Craig Counsell is. Like, I gotta like look at like what he's doing, because it's probably good. I don't know.
There's two problems with Manager of the Year. Sorry, Mark. I know you're chomping at the bit to defend Buck. There's just real quick. There's two problems with Manager of the Year. One, incomplete information. It's just an impossible award to actually know enough to vote. You just don't know. Like, it's just impossible to know all the things that go into the 15 different clubhouses, right, in each league. And then also, it's a different assignment for different managers. Like, Dave Roberts's job is different than Gabe Kapler's job. And so Kapler can be very good at what he's doing, but he's doing a different thing every day than what Roberts is doing, than what Torrey Lovello is doing. And that will get into my macro question about the Cy Young shortly, but that's just a thought I have, where it's like, yeah, it seems like Gabe's doing a good job, but like, how do you rate this good job versus that good job? There's no metric to decide.
Well, they should abolish the award. So, I mean, honestly, like, they should just like get rid of it. It's because all those things are true. And, you know, the Dave Roberts thing is actually a great point. We've sit here and talk about all these teams that are full of talent and have shit the bed. The Padres have shit the bed. The Angels have shit the bed. The Mets have shit the bed, and the Yankees have shit the bed. Now here's the Dodgers, who could very easily be in that group. And because their talent is like, oh, well, we can't possibly like give this guy manager of the year. Like, to me, that just underscores how dumb the award is then. If we can't reward people for doing a good job in literally the exact same scenario that other teams have faced and are doing far worse, then when does this person deserve any credit then? Let me ask that.
To this point, Bruce Bochy never won Manager of the Year with the Giants. Not once.
I mean, how dumb is that?
Is that true?
Yeah. Gabe Kapler has more Manager of the Years with the Giants than Bruce Bochy.
Like, I mean, seriously, how dumb is that? That guy's got 3 rings, and Buck Showalter's got none. And Buck's got 4 Manager of the Years.
Here he goes.
And Bochy's got none in San Francisco. Come. Like, I mean, there you go. Case closed. What a stupid-ass award. Like, what's the point? It's all eyewash if we can't, like, you literally can't manage it. And the things that they do well are things you're not going to see. It's happening behind closed doors, you know? Like, it's being able to tell somebody, you know, they're going to have to take a demotion, like, either out of the lineup or get sent down or out of the rotation, and to be able to do those types of things and still keep the ship going smoothly. And we don't see that stuff. We don't see that stuff.
I will take this seriously, though, and I'm gonna be the best Dern voter that you've ever seen.
Mark, I mean, did you know that Buck has won Manager of the Year no manager has won it more times than he has?
Dude, and he should win it again this year, because all these Mets stories have come out, and he's the only guy that has no fault in what happened over there. I mean, if you can't win an award for that, Yeah, like, I don't know what they should name the damn thing obsession. After. They should call it the Buck Showalter Manager of the Year Award.
How did we do this? We took like 3 weeks off from this. We really did. We did avoid this.
No, the Teflon manager does it again. He should make it back to back.
I wish I cared about anything as much as you care about this, Mark.
I don't care about it. I don't. I really don't. I just think it's hilarious. That's all.
Yeah.
All right, give me your macro.
Yeah, okay. No, like, so Cy Young, right? Like, I don't vote for any of these things anymore because I just stopped. You know, when I went to the LA Times, they wouldn't let us vote, and I found I didn't miss it at all, and so I just didn't – I haven't picked it back up since I came here. But, like – how do you decide what you care about with regard to pitching in a given year? Because it's also like, it's such a, like last year was an interesting example of like Sandy Alcantara and Julio Urias, right? Like Sandy Alcantara, I think was a pretty clear winner. He was pretty clearly like the pitcher who had accumulated the most value, but he was also permitted to accumulate value in a way that someone like Julio Urias was not. Now, like some of that is on merit, some of that is on, you know, the philosophy of the team. So like, I just, what I wonder is like, if you're given a Cy Young vote, like what are the categories that you look at that really matter to you? And do they change from year to year? Are they different now than they were 5 years ago?
Dude, they might be different than they were 3 years ago. I think that's absolutely the right way to look at it. You know, the thing about these awards, as someone who had voted for a long time when I was a writer, they don't give you many instructions. It's really open-ended. I think in the MVP, you know, there's one that I would ignore, which is like character, because like, come on, okay? Like you can't, good luck. Good luck trying to ascertain that, all right? Now, the second part of it is, well, they've got to play a bunch of games. Makes sense. You got to post. Other than that, that's it. And so with the others, it's even more open-ended. They just give you nothing to go on, which I think is a smart thing to do, especially when we're talking about pitching. It's changed so much fundamentally. I think there's never been a wider gap between the numbers that the players care about and the numbers that most folks are using to evaluate performance. And I think that gap is widest in pitching because you talk to guys and you know, even the ones that are hip to sort of like how metrics work and aren't intimidated by those things will still tell you it bothers them if they don't have a W by their name at the end of the ball game. And so there are people that might listen to this and roll their eyes. And I would tell those people, hey, man, like put the shoe on the other foot for a second. This has been drilled into your head your entire baseball life that this is important. Is not as easy as it sounds to just ignore that. So I think that's where the voters come in, is that, you know, if you're trying to do it properly, you should be dynamic and evolving in the way you evaluate and what numbers you use, because, hey, man, it does change. And so the thing I land on is this, who's posting? Okay. And yeah, and it's a great point talking about the Marlins and sort of the, you know, actually Alcantara like went through 115 pitches the other day.
He still does, Yankees. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, and I get that, and certainly you weigh that. But also when it has just become increasingly rare to be able to get those types of innings and length of performance from pitchers, you know, regardless of that context, I think it's still something you pay attention to. So, you know, I think for me, like there is so much weight that I feel like should be carried by just how often you're able to provide this performance for your team. Like it really is a quantity game in a lot of ways when it comes to the pitching.
To this point, just a quick quiz here. Baseball Reference WAR. Which National League pitcher is at the top in Baseball Reference WAR?
Strider.
That's a good guess. Logan Webb.
I think I looked at this. Yeah, I looked at this earlier. I had a thought about this as well, but keep going.
You'd be okay, so Logan Webb, and he's doing it for a lot of reasons, but the most important one is innings. He's just giving the Giants innings. And, you know, I'm biased, but they're not laborious innings. He's getting them into the seventh, the eighth. He was a pitch away from a complete game over the weekend. He's doing this comfortably, calmly, for a team that really needs it, that a team that doesn't have a ton of healthy starters, that has value. So if I'm looking at, okay, I'm looking at strikeout rates, I'm looking at what a pitcher can control, I'm looking at walk rates, home run rates, I'm looking at, sure, I'll look at the ERA, I'll also look at the FIP, I'll look at all this different stuff, and then you'll probably get, in most years, 2, 3, 4 pitchers that are all clumped together. Then you look at the innings, and that's where you make the decision, because that is 20 innings that weren't going to Tristan Beck. That's 30 innings that weren't going to Jacob Junis, which those pitchers have been fine this year, but you know what I'm saying. And on some teams, the pitchers that have to get those innings aren't fine. Innings are so big, especially when you're dealing and you're at the top of a rotation.
So innings is the thing that matters to you guys the most. Like that's a separator.
It's a separator. That's a great way to put it. It's a tiebreaker. It's a separator. It's not the end all be all. You can be a Cy Young if you're, you know, throwing 130 innings if you're that dominant. But yeah, it's definitely a separator.
I think it's become more of a separator because I remember, and you just said it right there, Grant. When I hear dominant, I think strikeouts. Are you getting guys to miss the ball? The thing though is that there's so many of them now. That's one. Like the strikeouts just aren't, you know, they're so plentiful. And also, the reason that front offices and people who are in charge of finding players love strikeouts isn't the strikeout itself necessarily. It's that it's the safe bet. The thinking being, if you can strike a guy out, that is probably not luck. That's something you can replicate as you climb the ladder in organized baseball and get to the major leagues. That, you know, and maybe it's because you've got an elite fastball, which is often the case, or you've got a secondary pitch that's just like elite and filthy. And then if you get the fastball good enough to pair off of that, now you've got a bunch of strikeouts. But that's a safe bet. So when we're looking, though, at like voting for a Cy Young Award, you know, this is really about what actually happened. It's about performance. You know, and I think for a long time, I kind of like thought, oh, strikeouts matter there. But I don't know, maybe they don't as much. I think, you know, when we're just looking at, okay, what actually happened on the ball field? That's why innings to me stands out. You threw the innings. You were out there on the field when your team needed you to be, right? And like you mentioned Webb, like, you know, his strikeout numbers obviously aren't super high. And yet, I don't know, there's 29 other teams that would kill for that dude in their rotation right now. Wouldn't they? Like, absolutely kill for him. So, it's innings, and I feel like, along with that, I feel like when we talk about dominance, you know, there are times where you have to make that decision, right? There's a guy who throws a bunch of innings, and you're comparing them to someone who has fewer innings, but they've been absolutely filthy. In my mind, like, it's really hard to overcome the innings these days. Really, really hard.
I think also with the strikeout numbers, you're going to see there's going to be certain guys. I mean, Strider comes to mind, right? Strider's going to be a really interesting test case if he stays healthy and has the kind of career it looks like he's going to have, where he's going to have seasons where he puts together, you know, like 160 to 175 innings with like 14 strikeouts per nine, right? With like, you know, maybe like a 3.5 ERA and probably a FIP that's underneath that, you know, like. And there's going to be times when you watch him when you're like, this is like the greatest pitcher I've ever seen. Like, this guy is just, this is a reliever for 6 innings, basically, just destroying this opponent. But then, you know, you will contrast that with someone like Webb, who is probably, if his career goes the way that, you know, he's going to want it to go, hopefully, he has a lot of seasons of 200 innings, maybe even like 210 innings. I know that's a crazy number to get to, of like 3.25 ERA with a much higher, you know, with a higher FIP, right? Because he's not missing as many bats. And so you're going to have like, he'll have a season with Baseball Reference says he's worth 6 wins and Fangraph says he's worth 4.5 and Strider will be reversed. And it's like, okay, so what, so do you decide on like, is it a rate based award? Is it an accumulation based award? And then how do you factor in like, well, what if Strider was allowed to go deeper into games, you know, and you know, and that's not suggesting the Braves aren't managing him properly, but like, do you start to ding guys or, you know, support guys based on just their usage? I don't know. I just think it, to me, like the MVP seems like a straightforward kind of easy thing to vote for, especially if you have the American League, just check Otani's name every year. But Cy Young feels like really complicated in a way that involves a lot of work, especially when I'm not getting paid for it.
Dude, he's right. It's gotten way more complicated. That is true. I think it has been more difficult. And I remember, you know, this is years ago now, but like in the clubhouse, having these conversations with the players, they too were all over the map. It wasn't exactly the easiest thing for them. And by the way, this is a subset of people that tend to kind of be like-minded, all right? Like they tend to sort of, you know, there's still a lot of people, hey, man, it's about the wins. Don't laugh at me. I'll tell you why. And like, hey, I'd listen to it. I get it, okay? Like, but also, yeah, they were kind of all over the place too. And it just, I think it underscores just the changing nature of it. You know, I'm always amazed at just like how, you know, I think the wins in particular just become so much more irrelevant every year just because of the way pitchers are used. It doesn't, it's really not a good, it was never probably a very good measure, especially when you're looking at it from a season to season. That's especially true now, given how, you know, pitching is deployed. So anyway.
I understand the point you're making, like, and I, it's not like I feel like they should take away those Cy Youngs from like DeGrom or Felix Hernandez or whatever. But like, I do think if your argument is going to be that innings matter, posting matters, taking the baseball matters, like if you're a good pitcher, you're going to win your games.
I mean, no, because Jacob DeGrom was a good pitcher, didn't win his games.
So, he didn't go deep into games.
Logan Webb's not winning games because the Giants are scoring, you know, 0.5 runs per game.
Have they considered pitching better? I don't know. Talk to him.
I mean, it's kind of a weird stat when you can take an L and like give up no earned runs. I mean, but just that's bizarre to me.
Should miss more bats. I mean, come on. Good pitchers win games. That's insane. This is I'm not having this argument. This is insane. Good pitchers win games. I'm not saying they're not good pitchers. They're obviously very, very, very good pitchers. But good pitchers win games.
Yeah, if Logan Webb were pitching for the Braves, he'd be 18-1. If Garrett Cole were pitching for the Braves, he'd be, you know, 20-1. Team matters, and I think that's one of the reasons. I get what you're saying, like, you control what you can control. But, you know, the win is a team stat. It's like RBI, where you...
I understand.
They're
I understand
cool as heck, but...
I'm not doing this. I can't.
What is this, fucking 1998? What am I doing here?
I can't believe I'm doing this. I can't. You got, you know, Carrig sent me on the road for a week. Let me tell you something. So I'm on the road. I'm in Texas. It's 105 degrees out. I opened up my my travel bag that has all my toiletries and, you know, after I took a shower today. And I popped open the deodorant. The cap was still on it, meaning that I didn't put on deodorant yesterday and I just didn't realize it. So that's the kind of the life I'm living out here. I have to explain to you morons that good pitchers actually win their games more often than not.
Wow, and good hitters have a lot of RBI. They can smell the run production out there.
Actually, yes. Good hitters do drive in runs. Actually, they do. Yes.
And also, the album of the year is Nirvana's Nevermind, because it just came out. It's 1991.
Listen here, you bandwagon-ass idiot, okay? Don't you feel kind of bad for Teenage Fan Club that, like, for the rest of their lives, they're like, oh, you know who really, you know, they're like the Sam Perkins of indie rock.
Dude, yeah, no. And
Mark has no idea what we're talking about.
I'm a huge Teenage Fan Club head. Like,
me too.
But to me, the biggest travesty is that Grand Prix is their best album. Like, that is a stone cold classic.
I
go to that way more than bandwagon-esque. Mark, what's your favorite Teenage Fan Club
album?
Man,
that sounds really good. I love that.
Mark is the actual person who puts on Teenage Fan Club and asks, is this music?
I'm the actual person who is going to decline your expense if you put in for deodorant just to get you back for 2009, you son of a bitch.
Dude, I'll pay for the deodorant if you really need to be reimbursed. That sounds brutal.
Have you heard the story about when Mark and I worked at the Star-Ledger in 2009? And I got hired out of college as like an intern, and then they kept me on as like a freelance clerk, I guess, basically. And so I was like basically like a staff writer, but I also had some like clerking office responsibilities. And one of the things I had to do was the reporters would basically show up with like an envelope full of receipts, and I would have to put in their expenses. So Mark like shows up at the office, like covering the Yankees. He's like, wow, I'm covering the Yankees. AJ Burnett talks to me every day, and drops off this envelope at my desk. And he's like, Andy, do my receipts. And then he leaves, you know, to go to back to Yankee Stadium. And so I'm doing all the receipts. And, you know, it's like lunches, you know, hotels, whatever. And then there's a receipt for a haircut. And, you know, I'm like, 3 months out of college, like, so I walked into, you know, my boss's office and I was like, hey, I guess this was a pretty narc thing to do, but I'm really not sure what the right thing to do is here. And I was like, hey, Mark is trying to expense a haircut. That's okay, right? And our wonderful boss, Drew Van Esselstyn, great man, he says, Mark's doing what? And he's like, can you give me that real quick? And I hand him the receipt, and he goes, okay. And then he just picks up the phone and immediately calls Mark and is like, we're not expensing your haircut.
Whoops. Was the thought like, if I didn't have this job, baby, like, I'd just let it fly. This ain't me that's doing it.
In the end, Mark should have gotten that $20, and you know the Newhouse family of publications could have afforded to pay for it, but I didn't know what to do. I just was, you know, so I screwed up. I'm sorry.
And no, he did not. I give Andy so much shit for this. He did not screw up. Just, you know, let's have some added context here. I was broke as fuck.
Yeah, okay. Right,
like,
right,
that's why I freaking tried to expense a goddamn haircut. I didn't have any money.
We were not well paid.
Dude, are you kidding? Like, man, if they paid us that now, okay, I don't know if like that would like cover my golf rounds for the year. Okay. Like it was just like brutal. So yes, that the funny part of that is, man, I was hella poor anyway.
Listen, if I'm Charlie Blackman, I get traded to the Yankees, I'm straight up getting a shave at a barber shop and billing the Yankees. Like, I am just billing them every week. Like, hey, here you go, sons of bitches. Like, make me shave my beard.
By the way, CC Sabathia won 19 games for the 2009 Yankees. He was a good pitcher. He won his games.
Wow. How many runs per game did they score that year?
I don't know. I just know that he won.
A lot.
They gave him the baseball, and he won on the day
Son
they pitched.
Of a biscuit. Yeah, I will say, so I do actually appreciate Mark's point where you look at what happened on the field, right? Because there are a ton of stats when I'm looking at Rookie of the Year, when I'm looking at MVP, that I wouldn't care about in the offseason if I'm trying to evaluate what's going to happen going forward. But if you've got a guy who's hitting 450 with runners in scoring position, does that mean that he's, you know, like some sort of robo Tony Gwynn and that he's figured out the secrets of clutch hitting? No. And in the future, I'll expect that to regress to the mean. But during that season, yeah, that matters. That counts. That's cool as hell. Bonus points, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you reward, I mean, this isn't idiotic, but like it seems idiotic to say it out loud, but you're rewarding results over process, essentially.
I know where you're going with this. But yeah.
Go on. No,
I'm just curious if that's what you think you value, is like for good things to happen.
Oh yeah, no. Right. When it comes to like this
right,
kind,
right.
this kind
so
of
like wins. So like, if the pitcher
yeah, no, I knew you were trying to trap me, but the win's a goof stat, man. It's a goof
it's not
stat.
A goof, like,
it
look,
is
I
a goof
cannot,
stat.
I cannot believe that. I can't physically can't do this right now.
Goof like, stat.
Goof stat.
Man, this is. You guys, you like whatever. You're doing a bit for.
I'm
know,
not doing
fans.
A bit.
That's
I'm
fine.
Watching
yeah,
you
are.
Guys duke it out because it never happens and it's wonderful. I want to take right. a break for once and not be your freaking foil and watch yeah. Grant take some freaking swings for once. This is Grant. Get him. Get his ass, Grant.
You ever play the Super Nintendo? It's got a lot of buttons, but I think that system's going to make it.
I do not think that Kyle Wright should have won the Cy Young last year because he won 22 games. I am saying that good pitchers tend to win their games more often than they lose. We all know this is true. That's how the sport has always functioned.
But if I'm comparing someone on the Braves to someone on the Marlins, you know what I mean? Like, you have to take in the support. You have to take in the defense. You have to take in all these considerations because it's not apples to apples. Sometimes it's apples to pomegranate. Sometimes it's apples to rutabagas. And like, you can't get me to care about pitcher wins. You just can't.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not asking you to care, Grant. I would never ask something that onerous of you, my friend and podcast co-host. I am asking you, Grant, I am asking you to stop doing this because you know I am right and you know you agree and you are doing this purposely to get me spun up, I believe.
I'm really not. Like, I listen, man, I cut my freaking teeth on Usenet. You know, you expect me to care about pitcher wins? Buddy, I was back there with Keith Woolner when you were still in middle school.
Oh, man. How many sliding doors moments are you away? How many sliding door moments away are you away from being a GM?
Me?
Yeah, like there's got to be in one of the scenarios, right, where a person like you became a GM, or you specifically became a GM.
Sweet Christmas, no, I'm a moron.
Yes, but no. Like,
yeah, no.
First of all, you haven't talked to every GM.
No, man, I make jokes here. Like, it's a GM. My God, like, I don't like what they call work. You know what I mean? Like, I was a really hard worker to get where I am, as far as, like, I wrote 20,000 words a week to be where I am today, and now I'm done. You know what I mean? I'm not writing 20,000 words anymore. My brain doesn't work like that, and GM to me seems like a 40,000 word per week gig, always and forever. Like, you have to have a certain drive, but also you have to know ball. And I don't, man.
Yeah, no, you've made that very clear in this conversation. You don't.
Except
know
for wins, man,
because
they suck. They suck.
You know, I'm starting to sense a new t-shirt opportunity here. And by the way, hey, thanks for that, Andy. Thank you. Thank you for putting my email on the podcast last week. The roundtable heads, like, you know, emailing me while I was on assignment, as Grant liked to say. Why would I have the authority, by the way, on merch?
Oh, you don't at all. I just wanted to see how many people contacted you.
It was like 7 or 8. We had 7 or 8.
I mean,
in the hierarchy, you are like above us.
Yeah, right.
I don't have t-shirt control around here is the point. Dude, I'm not like some
closer than us.
Big shot. That's a big shot.
We should get merch. We should get merch, I think.
Yeah, Win Suck right next to the only pro labor baseball podcast.
Oh, I love
good.
That. Yeah, I That's love good. That.
There's a podcast that I'm familiar with called The Omnibus. It's got Ken Jennings, the Jeopardy host, and Bean Dad, for lack of a better description.
What?
Yeah, no, it's a good podcast, entertaining. But they have a bit on there where is something compatible with Marxism or is it incompatible with Marxism? And so like they're going through and it's like, oh well, that's not compatible with Marxism. They use it in the same jokey way as like pro labor podcasts. So they have two different shirts. You can rock your compatible with Marxism shirt or your incompatible with Marxism shirt. You get to choose.
So serious question for you guys, okay? Are pitcher wins incompatible with Marxism, or are they compatible with Marxism? Grant, you first.
Pitcher wins are just an absolute tool of the bourgeoisie. They are just, I'm over my skis here. I have no idea, man.
Yeah, they're incompatible. Let's move on.
Well, no, they're actually
no.
You guys are such idiots. Like, if you're actually arguing that it's a collective achievement, then of course it's compatible. You guys are, oh my God. I'm so tilted right now. I'm gonna go get Vietnamese food and have pho and then walk out into 110 degree heat, you know, and just have the absolute nuclear ass.
They should sell that at the ballpark.
Probably literally.
At a stand called Ball Pho.
No. Ball pho,
right next to Ty Goes to the Runner.
Yeah. Oh, man. Baseball themed restaurants. You could do like a whole row.
Well, because Seattle still has it, I think. Intentional Wok. It's Chinese food. You get it?
Oh, got it.
No, this is definitely the group I want to hear discuss the Wander Franco situation. This is the group.
I will say, Texas to me, when I go to Houston, pho. It's always pho. It's just the Vietnamese diaspora.
Off the charts, great.
Houston is one of the towns that, you know, it's spread out more, but Houston, like, you know, 10, 15 years ago was one of the best for Vietnamese food. It's still very good. It's just, it's more commonplace. But yeah, there was a lot of Vietnamese immigrants who moved there. So also Atlantic City, New Jersey, you can get
really
far.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, because a lot of folks came over and worked at the casinos. And so it built up a real vibrant sort of Vietnamese community there.
Yeah, I love hearing about regional stuff like that where, you know, you're not thinking about it, but then you're like, well, when you're in Milwaukee, you get, you know, like all of this, you know, the kind of like the immigrant diaspora that populated Milwaukee. Anyways, that's not baseball.
Ethiopian and Somalian food in Minneapolis, for example.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. Dude, San Jose in Vietnamese, actually. It's a big one.
Pizza in New York.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When I go there, I'm going to get myself a real New York slice.
Tomorrow,
yeah, that might be the funniest bit in sitcom history. I know
that's a great bit.
Of baseball, but like that makes me laugh every single time. Oh my gosh,
that's the one where Conan O'Brien walks by him, right, when he thinks he sees Tina Fey.
No, that's that's The Office, where you got Michael Scott.
What show are you talking about?
The Office.
Yeah, yeah. It's Michael Scott goes to New York City, and he's in Times Square. And
oh,
he walks
you're talking about later in the episode.
Yeah, later in the episode.
Got it. I haven't seen that episode in a while. I just know that bit.
Man, Grant, all right, we'll talk off mic about your stealing Simpsons valor stuff going on here. But do you guys care about the NL MVP race at all?
Yeah,
I mean, brave.
This is a perfect one where I will use as a tiebreaker Acuna stolen bases because they're neat. You know what I mean? The war is all
that many of them.
They're jumbled up there, but I just like the fact that he's getting on base and making the pitchers sweat.
That's exactly it. There it is. I think that's where you have to pay attention to what's happening on the field, and he is disruptive. He's a gigantic pain in the ass to the other team. That's the guy. I want 9 of those. Give me 9 of them.
I remember when Kenny Lofton was on the Braves, and every time he would come into town, so flippant annoying, so good, so annoying. And he'd just get on base and it was just, it was obnoxious and it like raised my blood pressure. I can only imagine what it did to the pitchers. Acuna's that guy right now. And he's hitting dingers.
And he might take you out of the ballpark too. That's the thing. Exactly.
I was aware that he was stealing a lot of bases. I was not aware of like how many he had stolen. Holy smokes.
That's a lot of bags.
Yeah.
This is like prime Ricky.
So, okay, just here's another one. You guys are, you know, both like maybe like 7 or 8 years older than me, right? And like by the time I started like watching baseball, stolen bases were like, they decide, you know, the nerds had decided like, actually, okay, what is like the equivalent of like a 50 home run season for stolen bases? You know, like what's like, where you're like, holy smokes, that guy had himself a season stealing those bags.
Well, I mean, what era are you talking about?
There you go. That's it.
How about the 1990s? Or how about the 1980s?
Well, 80s, you would have like, a guy like Cecil Espy come up and he's got 45 stolen bags and wow, that's cool. But you had guys like, I mean, Vince Coleman, what were his numbers? Those are,
I'm looking plus. At it now, 110, 107, yeah, and 109 that's from it. 85 like, what, to 87.
So I was going to say, in that era, once you got above 90, that's sort of when you're like, oh.
And then that's maybe 75 was like a 50 homer season. What he was doing was closer to like 60 homers.
And by the way, then, if we grade it on that scale, look at what Ricky did in those years. That's like an 85 home run season. Like that, you know, there's those years where they just like said, go, you know, like they just this automatic green light, just go. And he decided this is great. And by the way, Howard Bryant wrote a book on Ricky. You should read it. All right. And he gets into this there where just the mentality and like, it's amazing. It's beautiful. And just the sort of competitor that Ricky was and, you know, gosh, like how smart he was too on the bases too. I mean, he always had contemporaries who were fast runners, but you know, Ricky stole those bags because he was studying way ahead of his time. Very cool stuff. Anyway,
he gives a lot of credit to Davey Lopes, just like the little things that you have to pick up on. I just want to put this in your head. When I was a baseball player in my youth, I had the fluorescent, I've told this story because you made fun of me for the gloves, but the fluorescent gloves, and I would just sit there and I would hang down like Ricky because it was so cool. It was so cool. But I just want to point out that this stuff is all cyclical. For example, you had in 1951, it would take like to get in the top 10 of all baseball, like 10 stolen bases. Like there were, that was back then, you just didn't steal. You would have Willie Mays say, man, if I had known that 40-40 was going to be such a big deal, I would have done it. But, you know, you just didn't steal bases back then. So I think this thing is cyclical. I mean, the rule changes have helped it come back, and I don't think baseball's worse off for it.
Hell no, I think it's better off for it. And of course I'm biased. I started watching the sport when guys stole bags. Thought it was a blast. I still think it's a blast. It's great. And it is one of those things where you listen to the people on the field and they talk about just how disruptive even the threat of that can be to a guy on the mound, to a defense. Like this idea of pressure. I know there's people that will scoff at that. But, you know, I think there is definitely something to it. Not everything, right? Like that's not, you don't go and build a team of dudes who can only steal bags or whatever. I'm not saying that. But having that element, man, it changes the game moment to moment. And that's a fun thing to have.
I would love if a team actually tried to do that, though. Like if they just like put 9 burners on there who could also pick it. I mean, you saw that with the 85 Cardinals. They had Jack Clark had 22 home runs. Andy Van Slyke had 13 and he was second on the team. But they could fly. They could fly around the bases. They could make you sweat, you know. If only there were a team that was fast, put the ball in play, like someone in the mid-2010s that won a World Series and another pennant. None comes to mind right now.
Hit the bell, baby. Hit that bell.
What's all that?
His prop bag like Carrot Top. Yeah. Here we go. There it is.
Voting for the NL MVP would be a bit challenging this year, if only because you have to think about, do I care that Acuna might be a slightly below average defender?
Be taken into account, certainly.
Like, I guess, like, what I'm wondering is, like, he's an absolute wrecking machine, right? In all facets offensively. Also, you know, Mookie Betts is that as well, and he's like a plus defender. He's not, you know, it's just an interesting, I think Acuna seems like he's going to win, that seems like a perfectly reasonable, you know, outcome. It just, again, the voting is really challenging, and I'm glad I don't do it, because I think you can't just, I don't know, for unless you're voting in the American League where you can just click Ohtani pretty much every year, like, you really do have to investigate some of these things, I think, to do it right.
Absolutely. I mean, you think about it, it's a spectrum where when Barry Bonds won 4 MVPs in a row, he would bring a lawn chair out to left field, and he didn't add anything out there defensively. But no one cared. No one cared because he was getting on base 60% of the time or whatever. So I actually really enjoy that part. I love the nuance. I love getting into it. And I love it when there are votes where there aren't a ton of wrong answers. You know what I mean? Like, when you get those votes and you've got the writers explaining it and you can read every article, and it's like, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
You said it with defense right there. I think not bring anything is very different from hurting the club. And so long as you're sort of closer to not bringing something instead of hurting the club, the offense will carry the day. And you know what? What award probably exemplifies that the most, and this is going to piss people off, the Gold Glove, right? Like, I mean, come on. Like, sometimes with the Gold Glove, it's like, you know, it's a prominence award, and they happen to be pretty good defensively or okay. Like, you know, so, and that's not every time, obviously, don't get me wrong, but I think there have been instances, obviously, where you're like, man, that guy really a good defensive player? Is he just, like, you know, well-known, right? Like, because anyway.
November 7th, 2010, Andy McCullough tweeted, Lee led the AL in FIP in response to someone like, wonder if Sabre guys figured out a way to relate wins to pitcher. And like, you were just like, you know, come on, man. Like, we've got FIP. That's what we're doing.
Grant, yeah. You want to talk about stuff that happened when you're 22? Yeah. Yeah, sure. No, we can do that. Yeah. They didn't have Twitter back then. Let's see, you know, we can go back and, you know, read your live journal or, you know, your Usenet nonsense. Like, man, that's good. I got owned there. I will say I was very much that person when I was young and stupid, you know, not older with children like you guys, where I, you know, felt like wins did not matter and it was unfair to punish players for not playing on a good team. But I've covered good teams and I've covered bad teams and I've covered baseball for a long time and I've spent time around some of the best players to ever play, and I've talked to them a lot. And I believe that good pitchers tend to win their games. And that is my point. I'm not saying that Logan Webb's not a good pitcher. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that good pitchers... Look, when a pitcher goes into the Hall of Fame with a losing record, we can talk about it. Until then, Grant, the pitchers who go into the Hall of Fame will have won more games than they have lost.
Okay, well, let me hold myself accountable. Like you were saying, when I was 22, do you want to be held accountable? Okay, so I'm at the Horde Festival, right? And Blues Traveler just played. Black Crows are coming on. They're the headliner. I'm so intoxicated that I feel like I'm going to throw up, right? Crowd, right? And I'm at the front. Do you, and I had this debate in my head, do you just go, bah, in front of you? Or do you go, like, down your shirt and try and be sneaky and just ruin everything? Like, are you trying to save the people around you? Like, what do you do in that situation?
You couldn't pull the ripcord and, like, you know, run off to the side?
No, man, it's like you're boxed in. It's just Black Crows, baby. Oh, you know, everyone's, yeah, right, like, Remedy, yeah, let's go, Remedy.
Yeah, dude, everyone, you had gotten the runaround and your stomach was all jacked up. What did you end up doing?
I've got a pretty good stomach, so I just powered through. I've got like Seinfeld streaks of stomach stuff because I'm strong. I'm strong like bull with that.
I'm sorry. I just got to email Sarah to get me off of this podcast. Hang on one second. I can't. That's it. 61. I'm done. I'm out. That's it. Ball game over. That's it.
All right. That's it.
I would just love, you know, like Mark leaves this meeting and then he, you know, he goes into a call with, like, you know, top editors at the New York Times. They're like, Mark, what were you up to before? He's like, oh, you know that guy Grant Brisby? We were doing a podcast about one time when he puked at the Blues Traveler show. And they were like, how much do we pay for this company?
Oh, man. Well, that's the hook that always brings our listeners back. All right, this has been episode 61 of the Roundtable. We'll be back next week, and we didn't get to the Braves as much as we wanted to, so I think assuming they're still good next week. We'll talk some Barbs next week. We'll be back to talk about baseball because that's what we do. See you then.
I was very wrong.